Each year, the task lays before people like me and even people like you. What do we make of this Easter business? This incredulous tale that even the very first witnesses and those in the first century thought was foolishness. I ponder that. I ponder that each Lent as we approach Easter. What new, what different thing will I say? And each year there seems to be more and more ammunition being mounted against the sensibility and even the truthfulness of these foolish claims we make that Jesus Christ is raised. Yesterday, in the Globe and Mail, some of you may have seen the article by Michael Volpe, Taking Christ Out of Christianity. Prominent minister in Toronto says, you don't need to believe in Jesus being raised. It doesn't matter what you believe in terms of doctrine. It has to do with the way you live. At her church this Easter morning, they will not sing Jesus Christ has risen today, but glorious hope has risen. For those notions of resurrection and salvation and sin are outdated and to be dispatched with, because they make no sense today for the postmodern community. We hear the urgent and articulate attacks upon Christian faith and all faith by the Christopher Hitchens, by the Dawkins of our world. And we scratch our head and I say, is there much to counter that? Is this really a fool's tale that I have believed? Have I been duped? Have I, along with millions of others, been taken for a ride by some foolish story told 2,000 years ago? This past week, I was listening to a fascinating, those of you who hear me regularly know I have this fascination with quantum physics and some of the interesting discoveries being made. And I listened on CBC to a conversation with a physicist, Michio Kaku, who is a professor of theoretical physics at the Graduate Center at the City University of New York. And he's written a book that has just been published March 11th called The Physics of the Impossible, a scientific explanation in the world of phasors, force fields, teleportation, and time travel. That's a mouthful, isn't it? Incredible. Fascinating explanation of science of the impossible, death rays and force fields, talking about being able at some point to bend light around objects to make them seem invisible. All the things in science of optics and electromagnetism, ramjet rockets, laser sails, all kinds of things, nano rockets can make things possible that seemed impossible before. It's intriguing, really, when you think of it. My mind was blowing, really, with these possibilities, listening to him with all the enthusiasm of a scientist explain what could be. So I take these things, arguments against the Christian faith, against this story, against Easter, against resurrection. And I say, am I again to stand up in front of these people on this Easter morning and tell them something that is not true? That's the kind of conversation that goes on in my spirit, in my head, and in my preparation. And so what I've come up with is that I'm not going to spend so much time trying to convince people, because the closer I read the story, the closer I try to reflect on the gospel account of resurrection and what happened in those early days following Jesus appearing, is that you cannot make people believe. And that the question of the gospel is not, do you believe in resurrection or not? The question is, have you encountered the risen Christ? Will you bear witness to this? Because even the first disciples, most of them didn't believe it. And for me, that's what gives credibility to this story. the fact that the four accounts of resurrection are all different, they have some common elements. But if they were all exactly the same, that would squeak and smack of contrived story. That they're disparate and they disagree on details. That there seems almost to be a competition for who saw him first. Jesus rebukes them for not believing, even when he appears to them. And so people say, well, if Jesus were to come today, I would believe. The chief priests and the soldiers and others, they had visible evidence. That's not the answer. It's not if Jesus were to stand right here in front of you, if our hearts are not disposed to the new life and new world that God is inviting us into, we will find some way to excuse that reality away. It's not about evidence in front of you. It is about faith. The physics of the impossibility doesn't even touch the question of death. I listen carefully for all the things that would seem possible in the future, and no mention is made about reversing the reality of death. You see, this is something only God can do. And so when we discuss the resurrection, when we talk about what happened to Jesus, it is something that goes on between God and Jesus. Nobody witnesses what happens in the tomb. It is what comes after. The invitation is to say, now get on with your life and open yourself to this risen Christ and bear witness. The details of the story are helpful for me because somehow we in this postmodern generation, in the scientific sophisticated way in which we engage life, we feel we have some kind of priority or corner on doubt and skepticism. The early disciples, as I mentioned, they too did not believe. This skepticism didn't begin with the 17th century rational philosophers or Darwinian philosophers. It began right at the first days after the resurrection and continues today. That's not the point. Because there is enough Easter to go around for everybody. Whether you believe it or not, you and I are recipients of an intrusion into the world in a new way by God. And by raising Jesus from the dead, which is what I will bear witness to, you can believe it or not, that's okay. But what I want to bear witness to is that Jesus raised from the dead is a declaration of the power of God to bring life from death and to say death is not the answer. Because you and I know that mortality here at Parkdale and in Ottawa is 100%. We're all going to die. No physics of the impossible is going to save us from that. By declaring, as the early witnesses did, that Jesus was raised, they were invited to make a statement about what God has done that has never been done before. And in order to capture that unspeakable reality, we notice here details that don't seem to make sense. Because you have to use language that is almost impossible to formulate to speak about something that is impossible. And so Matthew says, there was an earthquake. And the graves opened and dead people got up and walked around and showed people. Well, what's that about? Matthew is trying to grasp for words to describe something that is unspeakable. And what he is saying, I believe in that, is not that dead people literally got up and walked around. But it is that you and I, who will meet our fate in the grave one day, will, because of God having raised Jesus from the dead, be able to walk again. The earthquake is a symbol that opens up a new world. In the 1950s in China, there was a devastating earthquake. Some of you might remember that from history. And in that devastating earthquake, there was a huge boulder, the side of a mountain that dislodged and came down. And what it did was reveal a cache of artifacts and historical items from another world 1,000 years before that had been hidden. Matthew uses the imagery of an earthquake that discloses and blows open the old settled facts of reality and opens up a new world. An opportunity for us to see, just see by a glimpse, what is possible. You and I have had experiences in our lives that you might call freeze moments. Words, experiences that are frozen in time in our hearts and in our minds. The first kiss. When she said yes when you asked her to marry you. The look on a doctor's face as he comes in holding the x-ray. First time you got approved for a mortgage. The words, "Mom, Dad, guess what? I'm pregnant." We have all had experiences that are freeze moments. The death of a loved one. You think of the person whom you have loved so well and have lost in recent or distant years. You can remember where you were, what you thought, what was going on. They're frozen in time, in our hearts. The resurrection event that the gospel writers and that the early disciples tried to bear witness to is like a freeze moment, but it's not captured in history. It is defining all of history, for it is outside of history. You see, the problem with trying to explain the resurrection is that it can't be explained. Resurrection explains us. Because it comes from beyond our historical reality and yet invades that reality. It comes to us as a gift, as a power of God whose love seeps into all of the settled facts of our lives. Because we prefer things as they are. For all the talk of wanted adventure and new experiences and exhilaration, give me security any day. I like to know what's coming. Surprise me, but not too much. Stretch me, but not too much. Here comes this reality. Here comes this gift of resurrection that stretches us, blows us apart, and says, don't be afraid. Do you notice how many times it says in the text, don't be afraid? Don't be afraid. This is good news. Good news of great joy. There's enough Easter to go around. One of the things I want to draw your attention to. Do you notice the reference to the women who go? You may feel that it's not for me because my doubts are like nobody else's doubts. My questions are like nobody else's questions. My tentative step into faith is like nobody else's faith. My vibrant, urgent faith and deep devotion in God is like nobody else. You are included in this story too. Notice what the text says. Mary Magdalene, what does it say? And the other Mary. And the other Mary. Mary Magdalene and the other Mary. Anthony Hopkins, and then there's me, Anthony, the other Anthony. You know, as insignificant as you may feel with your questions, with your hopes, with your fears, hold on to that phrase. We're not told here in this particular instance who this other Mary is, just that there's the other Mary. Not named in a specific way, just the other one. There's enough Easter to go around. Why I feel that I humbly, not apologetically, yet humbly, can stand in front of you and bear witness to Easter and to the resurrection of Jesus is because not only have I witnessed in my life the intrusive display of God's grace, an encounter in prayer and otherwise in the life of people struggling for peace and for justice in different parts of the world, but also because the testimony of others continues to inspire me. This day, it's 28 years ago today, that Archbishop Oscar Romero in El Salvador called against those who would continually kill members of their own nation to stop. The paramilitary and others were oppressing, and they were not acting as God would have them. And so Archbishop, he was a strident advocate for reconciliation and peacemaking. And he proclaimed that. The next day, behind the altar as he was celebrating Mass, and he had just finished the words, "This is the blood of Christ," when he was shot and killed, and his blood intermingled with the wine in the chalice. And if you read his story and listen to it, it is because he used to be a very conservative bishop, and things as they were, and the settled facts, but something transformed him. An encounter, personal encounter with the risen Christ, changed his way of engaging his faith and life. That's the story. If you want a scoop, look at the lives of people who have encountered this Christ and whose life has begun to make a difference for the world. But even if you can't find them, and if you take solace in your doubts and in your willingness and decision not to believe in the resurrection, you know what? There's enough Easter to go around. Because the good news of God's love, as the children reminded us, flows over and over and over and spills into every life, every frozen moment, every doubt, every fear, every depression, every hope, every joy. That's the good news. Because of Easter, our lives and the life of the world will never be the same. I'm not going to be like Ripley and say, believe it or not, but rather experience the risen Christ. Amen.